You mean like not fed animals and like animals that are poorly fed on pasture?
Yeah, grass-fed, pasture-raised, all of those sorts of things. Now, if you, as an example, I'm working with a guy up in Northern California, and he sends down his samples, and I analyze them and make recommendations, and he adds amendments to the land, to the pasture. And those amendments, since you buy those by the ton, they're relatively inexpensive. At the same time, what he's found out is the better he makes the pasture, the more cost effective it is. In other words, the animals actually, in weight volume, the animal eats less, but the animal gains weight faster. There's more lean meat. The flavor is much, much, much better. The consumer response is, you know, multitude of times better. So we're selling the products that come from his ranch. We're selling those for, you know, pretty much double to triple what our competitors are selling their stuff for. And it didn't cost him anywhere near double or triple in terms of expenses to raise the animals. He has less death loss. In fact, his death loss is down to zero. His animals put on weight much better and much faster, and they're stronger, and so he's getting more tons, more pounds, and he's getting a better price for it, which is really where you want to be as a grower. And you know, so it's like that. It's like I referred to earlier, that good cycle versus a bad cycle. If you get on a good cycle, it all goes good. If you get on a bad cycle, it all goes bad. It's what I call the threshold level. I think I mentioned it when you guys were here and we did the videotaping. There's something called the threshold level. And when you hit that threshold level, it doesn't matter whether it's plants or animals, when you hit that threshold level, everything goes good. And your return is exponential. The problem is most people don't believe there is a threshold level, and most people don't actually farm to try to hit that threshold level because they don't believe it exists, but it does. And so basically, you know, where we're going is we're trying to build in the retail sector a department of nutrient-based products, we hope that we'll have the full line of meat and the full line of fruits and vegetables eventually. But actually, like I said, the meat side is going better than the fruit and vegetable side. And, you know, I mean, it's sort of if you look at the fruit and vegetable side, it's pretty sad. I mean, 50 to 70% of what a grocery company buys usually goes out the back door. And that is a sad state of affair. I mean, for the fruit and vegetable producers, you know, it doesn't say much about their product, does it? I mean, if you display it on the shelf and 50 to 70% of it goes bad, that's a pretty telling statement as to how good your product is or how bad it is. The meat side is better partially because it under refrigeration it lasts longer in many cases. Because there are less items in the meat department than there is in the produce department, it's a little bit easier to control. Although you still have a substantial loss on the meat side, it's not what the produce side is. So, you know, it's a situation that really needs to turn around. And people say, well, if we produce better product, then we're going to put ourselves out of business because people will buy less. And that's simply not the case. What it is you produce more per acre at a better price, your return is better. People will eat more good food and less bad food. In other words, most people, Hugo, do not understand how much of our food that is produced today is commercialized, is full of fillers, is full of things that are artificial. It's full of what we call empty calories. I think most people have heard the statement empty calories. Well, if you take out of our diet the empty calories, you put into our diet nutrient-dense food, what you'll find is, in total, yes, we may eat less, but the percentage of good food that we eat or nutrient-dense food that we eat goes up. So actual consumption of fresh fruit, vegetables, meat, and dairy will actually go up. The what will go down is the amount of filler. And that's nothing but good for our society and for the health of our country and the health of the planet. So, you know, it's that kind of that back, and I know I go back to this all the time, but it's kind of going back to that good cycle versus bad cycle thing. You know, and that's what it comes down to, you know.
Mark, how does a farmer get to nutrient-dense produce? And it's obvious that nutrient-dense produce is what the buyer wants. And it's also, it's obvious that the customer is willing to pay more for nutrient-dense produce. So how does a farmer, or how do you people get to have farmers produce nutrient-dense produce, especially when it comes to what you're talking about is that animals, which is seems to be your fastest growth area.
Right. Well, what we do is we will use a systems-based approach to achieve nutrient density. In other words, what we do is we realize within the soil environment, you start with a given set of conditions. You start with given soil types. There are things that are given, and those are the things you start with. What you do is you move from that starting point to a point that you hit that, what we call that threshold level, okay? And for each variety or each plant variety and type, that threshold level changes. So if you are growing avocados, it's one level. If you're growing grapes, it's another level. If you're growing chickens, it's another level. So, you know, there are different levels for each different thing. So it sort of depends on the commodity or the variety or however you want to say it, Hugo. But what it is, you have a beginning point. And then what you do is you have to affect several things. You have to affect the plant physiology. In other words, what it is you have to compress everything that you're doing into the physiological nature of that plant. Okay. In other words, that every plant has several stages within a growing season, let's say. Okay. And so what you're trying to do is at every stage, you're trying to maximize that plant's ability to produce. Okay. Well, yep. In order to do that, what you do is you have to be able to create within the soil an environment that is very much in sort of an anaerobic versus aerobic environment. In other words, you have to have good pathogens, you have to have good soil microbes, and you have to feed them. Most people don't realize that soil microbes don't simply exist in the soil at the behest of the grower. You know, soil microbes, the variety and population of them, are in many cases simply dependent upon how much food's available. So the ability to create a productive environment for your soil pathogens and for your microbes is huge. The second thing is you have to feed that environment in a timely manner that maximizes each stage of growth for the plant. Okay. In addition to that, what you have to do is culturally, you have to maximize that plant's ability to produce by changing your cultural practices to the benefit of the plant. So farming is very much engineering. It's not a natural act. It's very much an engineered act. What you're trying to do is you're trying to engineer an act in a natural environment. That's ultimately what you're trying to do. So all of those factors need to come into play. And Mother Nature throws curveballs at us every year, so what we need to do is we need to be able to adjust on the fly. So in Beyond Organics, what we do is we start with that as a base, and then what we do is we write programs for growers. In other words, most growers, if I were to give them a recommendation today, I'm lucky if that recommendation gets carried out in the next 2 weeks. Okay.
Yep.
Ultimately, though, that recommendation needs to be carried out not within the next 2 weeks, but within the next day or two or three or four. And if I spring all this stuff on the guard at the last minute, his chance of success is very low. In other words, it's like going to school. If the teacher pulls a pop quiz on you, most of the time you're screwed because you're not ready. Okay?
Right.
However, if the teacher tells you in September, okay, in April we're going to have a test on this, or in January we're going to have a test on this, he gives you months and months to prepare, you'll probably do pretty good because you are prepared. In our system, it is the Beyond Organics consultant's job to prepare the grower to be successful. It's the grower's job to go out and be successful. Okay?
Yep.
So what we do is we prepare our growers to be successful. So if a grower is interested and he is capable, we can help him. But he has to be interested and he has to be capable. If he is, then what we do is we write a plan and we simply tell the grower to please execute the plan. And we figure if the grower gets about 70% of it right, he's doing pretty good. If the grower gets 80% right, he's doing real good. And if he gets 90% right, he's probably going to hit or exceed the threshold level. And that's, you know, in a ballpark sense, that's in essence what happens. And for the growers that hit the threshold level, his profits usually go exponential. You know? So that's really what happens, and that's really kind of how it happens. And, you know, it's one of those things where a grower has to be that interested. You know, I've often said, I think I said this in the video, is that, you know, that most growers really don't have the fundamentals of farming down. But the ones that can or the ones that do do a heck of a lot better because they understand where we're going. In most cases, at least here in California, when I have discussions with growers and I get growers started, the first year usually is a lot of learning. You know, a lot of mistakes are made and a lot of things are learned from those mistakes. And then kind of the second year, we kind of go forward, you know. And by the third year, we're doing pretty good. You know, that's the normal case of how the cycle goes.
Mark, from what you just said, it sounds like some farmers might find it daunting or think it's too hard to do that.
Yeah.
So how does a farmer usually take to your program or basically what they're doing is trying to get nutrient-dense produce. So how does a farmer get his mindset to make the necessary changes, or what sort of changes are necessary for the farmer?
Well, what usually happens, Hugo, is a farmer, when he realizes what I'm asking him to do and he realizes what's going to go on, they usually get a little bit afraid. And so what I will do is I will give them things to look up, okay, sort of get prepared kind of stuff, you know. And they, you know, a lot of this stuff is available in one form or another. Growers can go do their own research and they can figure out that everything that we're saying is based on sound science, and it's all the truth. In other words, what happens to most growers is they get sold a bill of goods by a bunch of snake oil salesmen. You know, what it does, it makes them jaded, makes them believe or trust nobody. Okay. What they find out about us is we're different. Everything we do is based on sound science. Sometimes we tell growers things they don't want to hear, but it's all true. And the ones that sit there and figure out that we're not the enemy, that you know, we don't get paid by any giant chemical company. In fact, most chemical companies don't like us because, you know, we tell growers that they don't have to do all the stuff that the chemical companies are trying to sell them. But usually the most successful way is a grower signs up for a year-round program. In other words, what we do is we will sit down and certain points of the year, we'll ask them to either submit to our lab or use their own lab, but send us some results, soil and leaf results. We will write a year-long program for that grower. We'll ask them to execute the plan. We'll adjust the plan as we go, but at least they're prepared. They have all the essentials they need to be successful. And usually what happens is a grower will do 50 to 75% of what we ask him to do the first year, but he sees enough results from that to be encouraged about, well, geez, yeah, I messed these things up, but here I did good over here, and yeah, I can see the benefit, and these guys actually make sense. They actually know what they're doing. And so the second year is usually a lot better because the grower's got figured it out, and he's like, okay, well, this makes sense, and yeah, I remember this from last year, and yeah, you know, I'm understanding this and that, and you know, it starts to get better, right? So their confidence level is much better, and usually that's the biggest difference between the first year and second year is a matter of confidence. But you know, honestly, Hugo, I've got growers that I consult with, not just simply here in California. I've got different growers around the United States that I consult with, and most of that is done via video camera and test results. I might go visit a grower maybe once a year, once every 2 or 3 years, depending on who the grower is. But it's one of those things where, you know, a lot of what we do isn't rocket science, and a lot of what we do, you know, is based in sound science. But what it is most growers have a part of what they need already. What we do in essence is we end up filling in the blanks. We end up making things make sense. You know, it's like Arden says. Arden will often say that the hard part is putting everything together and making it fly. And that's kind of where Arden will turn growers over to me and say, okay, Mark, here's this guy. He's good at this and this and this. What he needs help with is these areas. You know, can you help him make it fly? And this, we've done this several times where, you know, growers will come over and they'll ask me questions and this and everything else. And it's a matter of them understanding what they need to do to make it all go. So I'm sort of the make it go guy. And that's kind of where we do it.
Mark, I'm pleased to hear you say that quite a few farmers, if not all farmers, have part of essential ingredients there already. So it's not something that they have to start from scratch. So are you in a position, you said it on the DVD, but can you sort of repeat that again as to, could you help farmers overseas, like in Australia, and how would you go about that?
Well, I would simply use the template that we already have, and that is that we sort of start with soil and leaf tests, water tests. You know, I get some basic information. Then when I get the results back, I'll sit down and do an interview with the grower, so that you know, he tells me kind of where he is. He tells me where he wants to go. He tells me what are his limiting factors, what he likes to do, what he doesn't like to do. And then what we do is we'll sit down and create a program for him based upon where he wants to go. And you know, each and every grower has different goals and has different things that are sort of hot buttons for him. And so our program will adjust depending upon what a grower wants to see. Some growers, they want the full enchilada. They want to be able to be the best of whatever it is that they have in their area. They want to be King Kong of their area, number one in their area. Okay. Other guys are simply looking at it from an economic standpoint. They say, okay, well, I don't need to be King Kong. I just want to make the most money. Okay. So we help those guys with that. You know, some guys have certain things that they don't like. I mean, there are some guys that love foliars. Some guys hate foliars. Some guys love putting fertilizers in water. Some growers don't like it. Some growers want to be able to dribble things on versus run them through their drip system. I mean, you know, every grower is different. And what we do is we figure out a program for each and every grower based upon things that they like to do. In other words, Hugo, if a guy likes to do something, I'm going to try to do as much as I can to encourage him to do that which he likes. Because to get a grower to do something he doesn't like, I'm fooling myself. I mean, there's a very low percentage chance that that's ever going to happen. Now, if I think that a grower cannot get to where he wants to get to without doing something, I'll tell him. I'll tell him, hey, look, you know what? I want to help you, But in order to get to where you want to go, here are your choices. You have to choose one of these poisons, okay? They're all poisons. They're all things you don't like to do. However, you got to choose one of them, okay? Now, well, I'm not afraid to tell the grower the truth.
Let's not use the word poisons. Let's say choices instead. I don't want to frighten our growers off.
Well, no, if all the choices are negative, Hugo, it's like taking poison.
Okay.
Sometimes there are no good choices. I'll give you an example. I met with a guy today, right? And he's telling me about he's having problems with his peaches, okay? And I know where he's at. I know exactly what the soil is like where he is. And I flat told him, man, you know what, Guillermo? I says, everything I'm going to tell you, you don't want to hear. And he said, why is that? I said, well, because all of your choices that you're going to have to choose from is hard. But I'm not going to take your money. In other words, I'm not going to steal from you. You're paying me to consult with you. And I'm going to tell you straight up what I think. You may not want to hear it. If you choose to turn me down and you choose not to use my service, I'm fine. But what I want is at the end of the day, I want to be able to walk down the street with my head up and I want to be able to say hi to you, and I want you to say hi to me, look me in the eye and say hi to me. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Because we've both been doing it the right way. Sometimes, Hugo, all the answers are difficult. And I found out a long time ago, you know, you're better off just telling the guy straight up. If he hates you for that day, that's fine. But in the end, he'll respect you because you told him the truth. So that's what I'm talking about.
Good.